Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. The conversation that we're going to have today is a little bit different than we were anticipating for our lengthy podcast for this week.
That's right. We were discussing possible topics.
Yeah.
And events intruded.
Yes. Yes. So we were wanting to do a longer podcast, maybe even an interview with someone to talk about play therapy a little bit, just to follow along with what we've been talking about throughout the course of this week. And then the events of Sunday night, early Monday morning, depending on which time zone you're in, unfolded. And so we thought that this would be a more appropriate talk for this week.
And the event that we're discussing
was the mass shooting that happened in Las Vegas on Sunday evening.
As many newscasters have already noted, this is America's worst mass shooting to date.
Right.
And they keep saying that.
Right.
Now, this is America's worst mass shooting to date. And now, so the last one, the most recent one,
has the highest death toll.
Highest death toll of any mass shooting so far.
And of course, it's only second. followed by the last mass shooting, which was in Orlando. About a year and a half or so ago, at the Pulse.
Right.
So,
and it immediately raises the question of when is it going to stop?
Right.
I mean, that's what everybody's asking. Well, there are actually two questions, I guess. Why does this continue to happen, and how can we stop it?
Right. And we're going to be very specific in this podcast, not to talk about certain things, but we're going to spend some very specific attention to things that we think are really important as it relates to this issue and sort of the aftermath of these types of events. But to provide a little bit of context, so the incident, I'll just call it an incident, the shooting, began at 10:07 local time in Las Vegas on Sunday, October 1st. Mm-hmm. And at that time, gentleman now known as 64-year-old Stephen Paddock opened fire on a crowd of thousands. We don't know exactly how many people were there at the concert, but we know that the concert was part of the three-day Harvest Festival that 22,000 people in total attended. So we don't know how many people were at that.
How many of that 22,000 happened to be there at that time?
Right, for
but
that particular
thousands of people were in an open venue on the Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah, so he opened fire into the crowd, killing 58 to date. As of right now, so we're recording this on Wednesday, October 4th in the morning, first thing early morning. So we don't know if any other news will come out.
There were over 500 people injured.
Over 500 injured, yeah.
And some were injured because they fell and
In the chaos
that ensued. Others were shot.
Most were.
And so we don't know whether all of those who've been seriously wounded will recover from their wounds. So the death toll could increase even more.
Right.
So we'll just have to wait and see. But 58 so far.
Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, we know that the Stephen Paddock killed himself prior to officers being able to get to him. We don't know how. That's a discussion that you and I have had. And I've looked for information about that, and I just can't find how he did so, because, well, as we get into some of this discussion, you'll see why this is a question that we have.
Right, why it's relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he was perched in the Mandalay Bay, and 32nd floor,
stories.
I think. Mm-hmm. And once the police got in there, they found that he had 23 guns, some of which were modified mm-hmm. with what they call a bump stock, so that mm-hmm. it could it was a semi-automatic gun that could then basically fire as an automatic, shooting many rounds per right. minute. Some reports say up to hundreds of 100 rounds per minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also had mounted cameras in different places, including right. in the hallway, so that he could monitor when people were coming. So this mm-hmm. This was something that was well thought out, well planned.
And that he was in a suite of rooms.
Right.
There were several rooms, and it had a single hallway. There was only one mm-hmm. entrance point
right.
to that suite of rooms. So
right.
he was able to monitor that.
Right.
And he knew when the police were coming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in addition to the 23 guns and hundreds of rounds of ammunition that he had there in the hotel, we have also learned that he had... a couple dozen or so other guns at his homes. He had two homes, one in Mesquite and one in Reno.
Right.
And that there was several pounds of ammonium nitrate found in his car. So
that an ammonium nitrate is the same compound that Timothy McVeigh used
right.
In the Oklahoma City bombing.
Right. So mm-hmm. It's bomb-making materials.
Right. So this obviously... had been planned.
Right.
This wasn't an impulsive act.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are reports from his, you know, interviews with his brother talking about, you know, what he knows of his brother, which
right.
is that this is out of nowhere, that there's no, you know, mm-hmm. he claims, as far as he knows, there's no political affiliation, no religious affiliation or anything like that that may have influenced.
No.
Though it is interesting that I read this morning for the first time that the Islamic State ISIS, I guess, has claimed that Paddock converted to Islam
right.
a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's no indication that that's the case,
right.
But they are now. They have started to talk to Paddock's girlfriend, who right. just returned from a trip to the Philippines,
mm-hmm.
and so she's back in the States now, and she returned last night, I guess it was October 3rd, mm-hmm. and so they're going to talk with her.
And hopefully she can provide some additional insight
yeah.
into possible reasons,
yeah.
motives, explanations,
yeah.
because certainly we have none right now.
Right. So that's the... That's the state of things
right.
Right now. So, but there's a couple of, well, I think that the biggest thing that we need to talk about, and we've talked about this before, but it needs to be talked about again.
Right. We talked about it sort of in general terms
right.
before. Now this is a very specific reference
right.
point that I think all of us can speak to.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that is the issue of mental illness and how mental illness relates to what occurred.
That's right, because whenever these kinds of shootings occur,
mm-hmm.
we automatically begin to look for
right.
an explanation.
Yeah.
Was it religious?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a religious conviction, part of ISIS or Al-Qaeda
right.
or whatever? Could it have been a racial, you know, we've seen racial
right.
tensions play out this way. So, or is it mental illness?
Right.
You know, now, my first thought, because I had taught at the University of Texas, my first thought was Charles Whitman,
mm-hmm.
who was the University of Texas Tower shooter back
mm-hmm.
in the 60s, and it was discovered that he had a tumor
right.
in a certain part of his brain. He had killed his wife and his mother and then went to the tower and was eventually killed by police. But my first thought was, could it have been something like that? So we all look for an explanation,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Which is why we are wondering how he might have killed himself.
Right.
Hoping...
That's right.
That we can see and look to see if there's something like that happened, if there was something wrong with his brain. His brother even mentioned, you know, maybe he had a stroke or something.
Right.
He doesn't know because this was out of character, out of nowhere.
So as neurobiologists, Dr. Burney and I are hopeful
yeah.
that his brain is intact.
Right.
However, wherever he shot himself, that his brain is intact and can be examined
right.
for a possible tumor or some other malformation that
right.
may offer some explanation
yeah.
for why he would have done something like this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So, but the reason that I think it's really important that we talk about the relationship between these kinds of events and mental illness is because because of what we tend to do. What we tend to do following such events. And I'm going to mention specifically just a few quotes, two quick quotes from President Trump.
Right. Because, and the reason we want to talk about mental illness up front is because our initial, most of us will assume, and we're going to say, most people will say he had to be mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that requires a little bit of discussion and some explanation.
Right.
Okay. And we should also say that we're talking about this event within our area of expertise,
right,
which is mental illness.
Right.
Okay. We're not talking about the politics of it. We're not talking about gun control. We're not talking about the, we're talking about this incident,
right,
within the context of mental health.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Because we do have to have, I think that, and I think we think that there has to be a more thorough discussion about our overall gun culture.
Right.
Not necessarily gun control.
That's right.
Not necessarily the politics of all of it, but the idea of our gun culture. We have a relationship with guns that is fascinating.
And these words are carefully chosen, gun
right.
control and gun culture.
Right.
Those are carefully selected. We're not talking about gun control.
Right.
That's another discussion.
Right. That's a political discussion.
Right. We're talking about the gun culture that has evolved
mm-hmm.
in our country, which may be a uniquely American phenomenon.
Right.
I mean, you hear about shootings in other places,
mm-hmm.
but nothing compares to the gun culture that we have in this country.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's unparalleled among nations anywhere.
Right.
You just
right.
don't see it.
So that discussion needs to happen. But you know, again, focusing on the mental illness aspect.
Right.
Just a couple of quotes. So one of the things, you know, in the aftermath, you know, of course, as is appropriate, the president gets up and he talks about and responds to the incident. And mm-hmm. some of the things that he has said since the since we have learned about it is create some concern for us. And mm-hmm. he refers to Stephen Paddock as a sick man, a
right.
demented man. And one of the things President Trump said was that that we are dealing with a very, very sick individual.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he and many people use the word sick.
Right.
And the word sick and even the word demented right. to some extent, mm-hmm. Technically demented is referring to dementia,
mm-hmm.
Which is a neurological condition. So,
mm-hmm.
but when we're talking about sick, most of the time, and I think what most people imply from that is a mental illness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Only a sick individual would do something like that. So we refer to that, you know, sort of to suggest a sick person, a person who doesn't think appropriately, a person who's not functioning the way that they need to function. We're not talking about somebody with high blood pressure. You know, nobody would take this event
mm-hmm.
and the words with a very sick individual and then say, oh, you know, he had diabetes.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. that we're not talking about it that way. That implication is typically aimed at mental
mm-hmm.
health,
right.
mental illness. And I think that is a very easy but inappropriate assumption.
It's easy and erroneous.
Right.
Okay, is the problem.
Right.
We'll have to unpack this thing carefully.
Right.
Because the implication is he has a mental illness.
Right.
But we don't know that.
Right.
Okay, so... And that's where we have to be careful that when we talk about a sick individual, we're
mm-hmm.
talking about a mental illness.
Right.
Okay. We don't know that this man had a mental illness. There's no evidence
right.
that he had a mental illness.
Right. And again, we'll learn more as his girlfriend is interviewed.
Right.
So we'll
mm-hmm.
know more about more up-to-date things. Mm-hmm. But his brother has been interviewed and his brother says that there's no history of mental illness as far as he
right.
knows. There's no history of any substance abuse issues or any
mm-hmm.
of those kinds of things that
right.
could help explain this. He very clearly says that this came out of nowhere. And I think that you know, as we talk about this and, as you said, unpack this, I think it's important that we think about not only, again, what mental illness is and what the risks of mental illness mm-hmm. are, mm-hmm. but also what the consequences are of attributing these kinds of events to mental illness. We need to talk about those three pieces.
Because if we make this connection, if we say, well, he's mentally ill, mm-hmm. and we automatically associate that with mass murder, mm-hmm. then every time we see a person with mental illness,
right.
we begin to wonder.
Right.
You know, and it's the same with, well, he's a Muslim,
right.
so he must be a terrorist.
Right.
He's some other nationality or some mm-hmm. other race, and you make these immediate assumptions.
Right.
And therein lies the danger, because, as we've often said, it's not the mental illness that's...
Right.
20% of us meet criteria for right. mental illness. 20% of us are not killing people.
Right.
Okay? So there isn't... We have to be careful about making this relationship between, well, he must be mentally ill. No. According to all the information we have, right. he's not mentally ill, right. and he doesn't meet criteria for any mental illness that we know of.
Right. Mm-hmm. So let's break that down real quick. We have a couple of different scenarios of how this mm-hmm. could be. We have a person with a mental illness could commit these kinds of atrocities.
Sure.
A person with mental illness may not or will not commit these kinds of
Because in fact, most don't.
Because most don't.
Right.
And we also have, that the third category is that a person without a mental illness commits these types of events.
That's right.
And that is a really, that third category there is really difficult for some people to appreciate. Mm-hmm. When I teach my students, because I do a lot of forensic work, and so I will do evaluations of individuals who have been charged with right. First degree murder and horrific crimes. And there is a relatively large percentage of them who do not meet criteria for any mental illness.
That's right. That's right. They have committed crimes.
Right.
And we know that...
Horrible crimes.
Right. But they don't meet criteria for mental illness.
They don't.
Okay.
And when I teach my students and I use those case studies and case mm-hmm. examples, they really have a difficult time wrapping their head around the fact that it is possible for people to do these types of things and not be motivated or not be driven by a mental illness.
That's right. And all you have to do is think about the mafia, for example.
Right.
They have these assassinations that
right.
they carry out periodically. Do you have to be mentally ill to be a hired assassin?
Right.
No, you don't.
And in fact, one could argue that those that are most effective at that occupation are highly functioning individuals and, mm-hmm. and are not... mentally ill in any way, because
that's
if
right.
they were, then they would make mistakes or they would
that's
have
right.
problems that would draw attention to them.
That's right.
And, mm-hmm. So when we talk about a mental illness, remember, and again, we've talked about this in other podcasts, remember mm-hmm. that to be qualified or to meet criteria
that's
for
right.
a mental illness, there has to be an impairment in functioning.
That's right. In our country and in most industrialized nations, we have a set of criteria
right.
that must be met in order to make a diagnosis.
Right. Okay.
And if you don't meet those criteria, we ethically can't make the diagnosis.
Right.
You might want to.
Right.
You might be very close.
Right.
But you cannot make the diagnosis.
Right.
You're ethically bound to stop short of a diagnosis.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if there's not an impairment in functioning, then there's not a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we look at if we're going to use Stephen Paddock as an example, he's been described as being quite wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
He was very successful in his work as a, a variety of things, but he most recently was working in real estate,
mm-hmm.
made lots and lots of money.
Right. So he was successful in business.
Mm-hmm.
He had relationships.
Yeah.
Okay. He got along with family members.
Yeah.
He had an exclusive relationship
right.
with one woman, but he was able to mingle with others.
Right. And even though he enjoyed gambling, there's
mm-hmm.
no indication that it was a gambling problem or anything like that.
That's right.
So, mm-hmm. so And he has family members that actually live here in Florida, right. Not too far from us in over in Orlando. And I guess right after Hurricane Irma came through mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago, he texted his family, made sure everybody was okay, called his mother, who's approaching her 90s, and mm-hmm. made sure that she was okay following the hurricane. So, suggesting that family systems are mm-hmm. relatively okay.
So 3 weeks before this horrific event occurred, he was checking on the welfare mm-hmm. of family members.
Okay? Right.
So again, no impairment, no obvious impairment in right. any part of his life.
Right. And all the while, one would have to assume that he was preparing for this event, within this time frame, simply because of the number of weapons he had, mm-hmm. the number of materials that he had for this event, and scheduling to get the room and all of that right. kind of stuff. So yeah. it's just really important that we recognize that without that dysfunction, without right. that impairment in functioning, there's not a mental illness. And mm-hmm. that, as I said a moment ago, that's really troubling for a lot of people.
That's right.
It's really troubling to think that someone could do these types of things without a mental illness.
That's right. So we've mentioned biology. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the cause could be a brain tumor, mm-hmm. an aneurysm,
right.
some other neurobiological mm-hmm. disorder. So it could be biological. We don't know. Mm-hmm. Hopefully his brain will be intact and they can do an autopsy study
right.
and hopefully shed some light on that. So that's the brain studies. Second, mental illness,
right.
another possible explanation.
Right.
As far as we know, no mental illness.
Right.
Okay. So where does that leave us?
That just leaves us with people being bad.
Sometimes... Mm-hmm. People do, I don't know what word we want to use, evil things, bad things, anti-social things,
right.
Unbelievably horrific things.
I'm glad you used the word antisocial, because we didn't hit that, but mm-hmm. I think it's critical that we do. We throw words around, when things like this happen, we throw words around like antisocial.
Right.
Okay, oh, he has antisocial personality, or he's a sociopath, or something right. like that. Two things. One, sociopath isn't a diagnosis.
Right.
It's a word that we use in pop culture, I guess you would yeah. just say, to categorize people who do really bad things. Sociopath is not in our diagnostic manual. Mm-hmm. It's not part of the World Health Organization's diagnostic mm-hmm. manual. It's not a diagnosis.
Right.
It is a pop culture type of set of characteristics that
right.
we apply to people who behave in particular ways.
It's more of a description
right.
of something than a diagnosis.
The other thing is with antisocial personality, now that certainly that is a diagnosis. That is,
right.
there are diagnostic criteria for that. But again, there is nothing that we know about Stephen Paddock that suggests antisocial personality disorder.
That's right.
Antisocial mm-hmm. personality disorder requires a pervasive, and I think that word is used very specifically in the diagnostic
right.
criteria of antisocial personality and all personality disorders, a pervasive pattern of behavior. And as far as we know, this guy mm-hmm. was not known to police. He was not known to legal right. officials or anything like that, suggesting a history of violent acts
right.
or criminal acts or anything like that. So absent that type of history, you don't approach 64 years of age
mm-hmm.
with an antisocial personality disorder and had never been
that's right.
identified or never had any previous events.
Typically, this is a years-long process.
Right.
And for most people who end up with a diagnosis, it begins with conduct disorder.
Right.
You know, that as a teenager, you're violating rules, you're breaking the
mm-hmm.
law, you're beginning to steal, you're
mm-hmm.
beginning to engage in illegal activities.
Right.
And then when you're 18...
Mm-hmm.
It switches to antisocial.
Right.
But again, there's this years-long
right. that
process.
That begins early.
That begins early and is obvious to
yeah.
most other people.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you know, again, the emphasis here, I think, is that we are very quick, because it is a easy explanation to mm-hmm. say that the person had a mental illness,
right,
and that is why he did what he did. Or, mm-hmm. But it is easy, but it's also flawed. It's a flawed assumption.
That's right. And when we misidentify things, we mm-hmm. tend to make mistakes.
Right.
Okay. And so what we want to make sure of, because at the beginning of this discussion, we said we want to know why it happens mm-hmm. and how to stop it.
Right.
Well, if we start by making an error and mm-hmm. saying, well, it's a mental illness,
right.
We're going to end up in the wrong place.
Right.
And we don't want to make that mistake.
Right.
Because there's too much at stake here.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that we attribute it to mental illness, it mm-hmm. leads to those kinds of issues. It leads us down the wrong path,
right.
because
that's right.
You know, when we make that assumption so early and we start following that path, mm-hmm. we fail to recognize other things.
Right.
The other thing, the other problem, I think, with attributing it to, and you mentioned this a moment ago, attributing it to mental illness, is the way in which we then generalize that right. perspective. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it comes out, or if someone proposes the idea, for example, that Stephen Paddock had bipolar disorder,
right.
there's no indication that he did,
right.
but if someone were to say, oh, we found a medical record, or we found this or that, that says, oh, he had bipolar disorder,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, this is probably how it'll happen, okay? You ready? They're going to talk to his girlfriend, and she's going to say, well, you know what? He does have mood swings sometimes.
Right.
They will use that phrase, he has mood swings sometimes, to
right.
say, oh, he probably has bipolar disorder, mm-hmm. which would make me...
But that's how these things happen.
Blow my top, yeah.
Right.
Because mood swings is not... I mean, it's part of being bipolar... But there are other things that are critical
right.
to the diagnosis. There are other things that are not mm-hmm. mood swings
mm-hmm.
that are mandatory for a diagnosis of bipolar disorder.
Right.
And so just mm-hmm. because somebody has mood swings does yeah. not mean bipolar disorder.
The most that we could hope for, if we're hoping for an explanation,
mm-hmm.
is if she tells us that he was receiving therapy, that
right.
that he was in therapy,
right.
and then that therapist can be contacted.
Right.
And that might shed some light on things.
And,
but again, what if he has a diagnosis of major depressive disorder?
Well, I think...
We're in the same conundrum.
Right. One of the reasons that I would say that that won't happen is because here we are 3 days out,
mm-hmm.
and nobody has said
right.
anything.
Yeah.
By now, because despite HIPAA, once the person is deceased,
right.
HIPAA no longer is enacted.
Right.
And so a therapist or a treating physician could come out now and say, hey, I've been treating him,
that's right.
and this is what has mm-hmm. been going on. So we don't have any indication of that. But
even if they said
mm-hmm.
he has this diagnosis, we have the same
right.
dilemma.
Right.
And no matter what the diagnosis is, most people with that diagnosis aren't killing people.
Right.
So we still have an inadequate explanation
right.
of why this man chose this behavior.
Right. Because that's the problem. The problem is that as soon as we hear a diagnosis attributed to a person who
mm-hmm.
does something like this, our initial response is to generalize that.
Right.
And so
right.
now, you know, again, saying he... was diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anytime you hear that somebody is
right.
diagnosed with bipolar disorder, that you're going to make that connection.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's just not correct. It's just not accurate because there are thousands, if not millions of people with bipolar disorder who do not commit any violent act.
Who will never commit that kind of a violent act. That's right.
It just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think is sort of a larger problem with this immediate attribution of mental illness to these types of events.
And we don't for a moment We all agree there's something wrong.
Sure.
I mean, we say he's sick or he's demented, whatever words we want to use. But we urge caution in choosing the words and assuming that there has to be a mental illness.
Right.
Okay. Because this is probably going to be one of those cases where there is no mental illness.
Right.
And there's no evidence of mental illness. So so it's a much more complicated picture.
Right.
We want a simple explanation.
Right.
There isn't a simple explanation.
I think that that's rooted in our need to feel safe.
Right.
Because we feel safe when we can say that happened because of that. Mm-hmm. When we have situations where people behave really, really badly like this, and we don't have that type of concrete explanation,
right,
that is disconcerting. Right. That is trouble. That doesn't fit for us.
And there's an analogy that we can use, because what we're after here is clarity, understanding. Okay, you take any sporting event, and yours is soccer.
Right.
Okay, but it doesn't matter whether it's football, soccer, bat. Doesn't matter. Why did we lose the game? There's never a single explanation of why we. It's, you can say, well, he missed the field goal. Yeah, but the score was tied, so there were other things that happened before the field. So there were always multiple explanations. And that's the same kind of understanding and approach that we need to take as we try to figure these horrific, as we try to understand and grapple with these events, is that it's much more complex than mental illness.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So. And we will never know. We will never know absolutely for sure.
But as we've discussed this, you mentioned something earlier in the week as we've been organizing our thoughts on this topic. And you said sometimes people just do bad things.
Yeah.
Okay. And there is no scientific explanation for why people do bad things.
Right.
I don't know what you want to call that. I'm not sure that I like the concept of there's evil in the world, but we know that our species is capable of wonderful things, and we saw that play out that day, and we've seen it play out since then. But we also know our species is capable of doing some pretty horrific things for which we have no explanation.
Right, and I think that a great example of that absence of any real explanation and the example of how troubling it is to us is actually another case, older case from here in Florida, Ted Bundy.
Right.
You know, it was so, not only was it troubling because of the number of people that he killed as a serial killer and everything, but the coldness, the calculation, the fact that he functioned really, really well. I mean, he was doing school. Yeah, he was doing really well in school. People adored him.
Right. Charming.
And here he is doing these things. And I mean, yes, there was some narcissism and some of those kinds of things. But again, millions of people are narcissistic and don't do those kinds of things. And so it is so troubling. It just doesn't sit well with us.
Right.
When we have a person who does those kinds of things for no apparent, for an unexplainable reason.
Right.
So
now, having brought up this notion of our species is capable of, we know that our species is capable of doing these horrific things in the absence of mental illness and the absence of any medical problem. I mean, we have thousands of years of human history to say people killed each other.
Right.
Okay, we could go back to Cain and Abel.
Right.
You know, our species is capable of that. So what we have to do as a culture is we try to organize our cultures so that those sorts of tendencies, which are always present, so those sorts of tendencies don't emerge and don't get acted out.
Right.
Okay. And we talk about the gun culture, and the reason you and I like to talk about gun culture rather than gun control is that if you look at take all of Western Europe, for example, or even including Russia.
Right.
Their cultures don't include this. It's not that they don't have, they have the same species, it's the same people, but they don't have this culture that produces this kind of violent behavior. Okay, and I think that's a discussion that we need to have, is what happens in the culture that it doesn't cause the behavior, but it encourages this kind of violent behavior, aggressive behavior against others.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a complex topic, because I think that, I would really want to get in and sort of dig into other countries and see what countries have similar similar statistics as it relates to some of this stuff as we do. Mm-hmm. Because, it's horrible to even think about, and I'm going to throw this out, even though I don't, just because you mentioned it and I wasn't expecting you to mention it, and this is what popped into my mind. We look at other countries where people do some of these horrific things, like, certain areas of Mexico, certain areas of the Middle East, where people kill other people just because, sometimes for religious purposes, but sometimes for money, sometimes for different things.
Right.
And we think, man, that is like, that's horrible. That's like a third world country. They're so, but yet those things still happen here. Certainly not in the same way and to the same extent and some of that kind of stuff. I don't have those statistics, but there is no doubt that those similar kinds of events happen in these other places.
That's right.
And we look down on those other places like they are, unsophisticated old
somehow,
places.
Right.
They're not modern places. And
well, we see Mexico, for example, but those are drug wars.
Right.
Okay. So those murders are taking place among rival drug cartels.
Right, in some cases.
Or judges or lawyers or people who get in the way. In the Middle East, it's a religious war. They're killing each other for religious and factional strife. Okay, so that explains that. We have no such explanation. We don't have any kind of an explanation for why this one occurred. It's not religious. It's not drug wars. It's not anything that we can come up with.
Right. So it's baffling, and there's not a way. There's not a clear. Again, we get back to there's not a clear answer. But I think that one of the things that comes out from these events is we see the horrors that we can inflict upon each other. But we also see compassion, and we see there was a report from NPR that hundreds of therapists from all over the country, went to Las Vegas to work with some of the victims and the families of some of the victims to help them adjust and cope and get, and recover from these.
Yeah, you have thousands of people who were traumatized. And psychologists from the city, first of all, from Clark
Vegas,
County and
yeah.
from Las Vegas, just came into that area and began to do therapy.
Right.
Began to do street therapy, makeshift places wherever they could talk to people. And so it brought out the best.
Yeah.
In one night, we see the worst and the best of people.
Yeah.
Because the psychologist, there was no money changing hands. They weren't doing it to get paid.
Right.
They did it because it needed to be done.
Right.
And I heard yesterday that now the school psychologists have been asked to come out and leave the buildings and come out and help the people who have been through this trauma.
Yeah. It's fantastic that those kinds of things can happen, and again, that we can pull together in those ways. And so one of the things we wanted to do, as we are sort of wrapping up.
What should we do about it? So we have this, we have the confusion on the one hand.
Uh-huh.
It's a complex issue. We don't have an adequate explanation of why this man or anybody else would commit such a horrific act.
Mm-hmm.
But what do we do about it? So right. now what do we do about
right.
it?
Right. And to for some answers to that, we can turn to the American Psychological Association. And you know the American Psychological Association, their website is apa.org. Mm-hmm. They have a tremendous number of resources for
right.
anyone. I mean, you know, certainly for psychologists, but also for, you know, anyone in the community, anyone in the world, I guess, who wants to get in and learn more about some of these things. Mm-hmm. They have mission statements about different events or different circumstances right. or problems, but they also have lists of strategies and mm-hmm. approaches to cope with some of these things. And so I've added a number of links in the mm-hmm. show notes mm-hmm. to different sources, some to just kind of look at their response to this event from October 1st, but also a link to what we're going to talk about next, which is, you know, some tips on how to cope right. with, you know, the aftermath of such traumatic things. But I've also included one about how to work with your kids and talk with your kids about right. it. And I even included one on just their overall mission or their overall perspective on gun violence and mm-hmm. gun policy and stuff. So,
and one of the things that impressed me in the NPR interview the other day, they were interviewing the psychologists who were doing therapy immediately after mm-hmm. the shooting. And one of the things that impressed me was the psychologist and the therapist saying that different people needed different things.
Right.
There was, I guess, one man had a complete panic attack.
Yeah.
He was in the hotel. Had a panic attack, wouldn't leave his room, and wouldn't allow anybody to come into the room.
Right.
So he needed a much more yeah. intensive level. And they said other people just needed to have a blanket and to be comforted right. for a few minutes. So knowing that different people react in different ways
right.
to these things.
Right.
Okay. And so that's what we want to remember, that everybody is going to react in his or her own way.
Yeah.
And you have to be sensitive.
Yeah.
to how the people around you are reacting. And typically some children will struggle a little more because they simply don't have the words, they don't have yeah. the vocabulary, they don't know how to label the feelings
the
that
insight.
They do have,
mm-hmm.
they don't have the insight. And so so children may require special
right.
Handling, special processing, but we all can benefit from these tips from the American Psychological Association.
Yeah.
It's very good advice.
Yeah, so
this is the go-to play. You know,
right.
when we say Google it, APA it. You know,
yeah.
if you have these questions about mental health issues,
yeah.
Start with APA.
Yeah,
they're accurate and well thought out and well expressed.
Right. And so one of the first recommendation is to talk about it, you know, and
yeah.
you know, I'm sure that as you hear that, you're thinking, well, of course, they're psychologists and therapists saying that you should talk about it. But it is important to process it, to get it out and to talk to somebody who will listen and who
right.
will, you know, appreciate your concerns and, you know,
some people
help
need
you
to talk
that.
About this stuff more than others.
Yeah.
I mean, I have friends and relatives, and
yeah.
they just need to go over and over and
yeah.
over trying to grapple with it and understand it. And you have to be available.
Right.
Let them talk.
And we have to recognize, too, that there are people who, you know, when it comes to some of these feelings and thoughts and emotions, they don't want to talk about it.
Right.
And so they can't. They can't. Mm-hmm. They're... biology, their history, their whatever it is, doesn't mm-hmm. afford them that, I don't want to say their ability, but because they could physically
right.
do it, but they just can't get themselves to talk about it. And so
mm-hmm.
they may need to talk about other things.
Right.
And in the process, it's mm-hmm. helping them cope with the strong
right.
emotions that they're having. But again, just talking and listening and interacting
right.
is important.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is striving for balance. And we've talked about this before. We, you know, and a lot of these things are things that we talked about after Hurricane
right.
Irma.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, striving for balance, and what they're talking about here is we tend to focus on the negative things. And just as we have today, we need to make sure that we're attending some to the positives as well.
Right.
And it's really difficult. I completely appreciate how difficult mm-hmm. it is to think about anything possible that could be positive coming
right.
out of this event. But you know, to recognize that, you know, look at how the community is responding. Look
mm-hmm.
at how, you know, if an event like this happens, look at the support that comes in and look at how different people can manage and help people, you know, through these kinds of situations.
Right.
So that balance, striving for that balance is really, really important. Right.
And the third one we did talk about with the hurricanes, I remember very clearly.
Yeah.
Take a break, turn it off.
Turn it off, unplug.
Give yourself a little time to recover and to reorient yourself. You got to turn the TV off. This is going to be running 24 hours a day for days.
Right.
And it's not a good idea to expose yourself to this kind of trauma, whether it's directly experienced or vicariously experienced. It's not healthy to expose yourself to this hour after hour after hour, whether it's a hurricane or a shooting. So take a break, turn the TV off, do something else. When you feel your strength returning, then if you want to go back to it and get an update, that's fine. But alternate, watch and then turn it off.
And I really like the next one because they just refer to it as honor your feelings. You are going to experience a wide range of emotions and feelings following something like this. Anger, sadness, rage, frustration, lots of different emotions. It's normal. And
it's normal to have them. Don't act out on them.
Right.
You know, don't, if you're really angry, and you know, curb the temptation to act out on these feelings.
Right.
It's normal to have the feelings. Don't act out. Don't go on Facebook and start railing against things. That's not how to deal with it.
Well, remember, the other week we talked about the difference between venting and dumping.
Venting and dumping.
You know, if you feel driven that you have to do something, do something productive.
Right.
You know, volunteer some time or do some donations or do something productive. Don't do something destructive.
Right.
And that's an important.
And help other people. You know, if people come to you and say, "Well, I'm so angry, I'm going," you know, help them process those feelings. Let them get them out. I think of teenagers or young adults. Our children are teenagers and young adults, and frequently they'll approach these things in a certain way. And it's a wonderful time to talk through these things. And understand their feelings and let them express their feelings and guide them in reaching other conclusions.
Right, You see the next one?
I do.
We talk about this, and one of the reasons I love the APA is because they're right on the same page as us. And the next one is take care of yourself.
Take care of
yourself. And one of the things they mention, the second line says, eat well-balanced meals, get plenty of rest, and build physical activity into your day.
Don't sit in the recliner with the TV on and try to get a good night's sleep. You know, turn it off, go to bed, take a break.
Eating junk food,
drinking, you know. I mean, do those three things. Take care of those three things. Take care of your body. Because you're going to be stressed.
Yeah.
Okay. You're stressed.
And when we're stressed, we look for unhealthy foods because
that's right. And stress compromises the immune system. So don't damage your immune system during these things.
Right.
That's the other thing you have to be careful of. Right. You already have stress at work.
Yeah.
Now you're adding lack of sleep, lack of exercise, and a poor diet to it.
Yeah.
And it's a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely. Now, the next one we kind of talked about and tied into the honor your feelings thing, and that is doing something productive.
Right.
You know, if you're going to do something productive.
Help out in some way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't be destructive. Be productive.
Right.
And the last thing is, if you have recently lost friends or family in this or other tragedies, you need to make sure that you recognize that the grief process is a long process.
It's a long process.
It's not something that you can snap your fingers and it's done and then you're fine. Many times those emotions, especially if you've lost somebody else recently, they're going to reemerge at times, and sometimes they're going to be stronger when they reemerge. It's going to be harder to cope with some of these things. And so you have to recognize that going into it, you know, when it happens, say, okay, this is what's happened. This is what I felt before, and this is what's happening.
There is no off switch with grief.
Right.
You don't turn it off. It lets you go.
Right.
You know, you have to let it let you go. When you'll feel that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you will feel it decline, diminish over time. Right. And when it does, it's okay to let go of it. It might come back.
Yeah.
Okay. But you have to let go of it. It will release you eventually.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are so many other things that we could talk about when it comes to this. You know, the idea of survivor's guilt, and you know, I think about those men who protected or shielded their wives and ended up being shot and killed during the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
The consequences of that on these women and their loved ones, and
their grief is just beginning.
It's difficult to fathom. I mean, you just can't.
I think of the Boston Marathon bomber.
Right.
You know,
that was another example.
Similar thing where the consequences just rippled and went across time.
Yeah. So there's much more to talk about with all of this, but we're going to end it today with the encouragement. If you're troubled by any of these things, if you're struggling with any of these emotions or feelings, you know, talk to somebody, get some help, call a mental health professional, call a therapist, call someone that you can get into and talk to that can listen, that isn't going to reinforce or fuel your fear or fuel your those negative emotions, are going to help you process them. Talk to somebody.
And I guess I would leave with we keep talking about this gun culture. You know, we have a gun culture.
Mm-hmm.
We have a culture of violence.
Right.
We like violent sports. We like violent games. We like violent movies.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine has a thing at the bottom of his email that says, "Be gentle. Everybody's dealing with something."
Right.
And I think that's what we have to remember when we say do something productive.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side of that coin is don't add to the anger that exists in our country today.
Right.
And it certainly exists. I mean, we've seen it over the past couple of months.
Right.
We've been angry with each other about almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
Pitting group against group and individuals against individuals. Don't add to that.
Right.
Don't allow this or anything else to launch you into these diatribes on Facebook and blog posts and that sort of thing. That simply fuels this culture of hatred and this culture of violence. So don't, we ask that you not contribute to that in any way.
Yeah. So
be careful of your posts and your postings and your...
That's a great suggestion. So, all right. But definitely go in and in the show notes again, follow some of those links and see the different things, different strategies. Again, there's one in there on working with your kids in the aftermath of such.
And that's
things.
A real good one, too, from APA.
Yeah.
American Psychological Association did one, how to talk to your kids about these things.
So
avail yourself of the good resource.
All right. We would love to hear from you if you are struggling with any of these things, if you have questions about coping with any of these things, you know, let us know. And we will do our best to share information and to promote information that to help with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.